Good morning and welcome to the Local Foods, Local Places radio show. We are hosted by KRZA Community Radio 88.7 or streaming live at krza.org, connecting cultures across the upper Rio Grande. I'm your host, Seth, and today we're talking with Kyle Grody, a yak rancher here in the San Luis Valley, about everything from yaks to water to entrepreneurship to food philosophies. Hope you enjoy.
How's it going, Kyle?
I'm doing great, man. How are you, Seth?
I am not too bad. I get to talk about my favorite bovine today, so that's always a plus. So first question is, where did the name Chocoray come from? How did you come up with that?
Well, it's the first basic symbol in Reiki, and Chocoray actually means to remove negativity or add protection. And, you know, for the ones that don't know much about Reiki, Reiki is just basically healing, loving energy. It's these old ancient symbols that date way, way, way back. And so I learned Reiki, me and my wife, years ago. And I had to pick some kind of powerful name to protect the ranch. The way we got the ranch was there was some local rancher that wanted to divert the water out of the area. And I came here with, at an auction, just wanting to buy two parcels that were the big water wells. And something came over me and it said, I heard this voice say, if you're going to do something big, do it now. And I did it. And I ended up getting the whole ranch. And I was like, well, okay, once I got the ranch, I need to have a powerful, symbol and name to help protect the water and the land. And so that's kind of how we came up with Chocoray. And
wow, that's fascinating. So I'm curious, you're at the auction and it comes to you. It's like, I got to go big on this. That's how it happened?
Oh man, I was a 33-year-old guy from Ohio with a Peace on Earth shirt going up against one of the biggest ranchers in the valley. And in fact, his lawyer almost looked like he was from a horror movie or something. And it was like a showdown. And they didn't know I was coming. They knew that other people were going to bid on individual parcels and stuff. And they didn't know I was coming. And I didn't know I was going to. By the way, I'm never allowed to go to an auction again. My wife won't let me. it was wild. It was almost like I was in touch with God or spirit or whatever name you want to put on it. Where it was like, hey, this is very important, to protect the water in the valley. And I've always been a big proponent of protecting land and water. So it just fit, it was a good fit.
So I'm picturing you, 33 years old, buying this land, embarking on a new adventure. What that was like, coming in and starting to do something you had never done before.
When you have certain beliefs or certain ideals, and you want to bring them into reality, it seems effortless. So even though we were working 7 days a week, we always said dark to dark or, dawn to dusk. It didn't seem like work because it was like almost like a mission, It was something that we wanted to do because we believed in it. So there was some learning curves. I was lucky though. I the guy who helps me run the ranch currently, Darren Smith, is amazing. He was a contractor by trade. And by the way, we call ourselves yak men instead of cowboys. he really truly is a yak man. This guy is like a yak whisperer. He was a contractor by trade and he helped me build a greenhouse. He can build anything. He's like a MacGyver. And then I had Brian Pike was another amazing farmer that knew how to grow vegetables in this climate and is amazing with seed production and stuff. So I was lucky with the team that came with me too. It seems like when you're doing something that is a good thing and you're working hard, the right people end up coming aboard. And that's what's always happened. You know, I mean, the workforce here in the Valley is tough. I mean, it's hard to find, you know, people and good quality, you know, good quality. There are tons of good quality workers here, and you just gotta, you know, it's almost like they get drawn to you. And so, yeah, it you know, there was learning curves, but I guess what I'm saying is I was lucky because I was surrounded with a great team.
Beautiful. I think applicable to just about any effort people are doing. And the reason there are yaks running around there is because you had the calling to protect the water for that piece of land however many years ago. Is that right?
It was the old Weiss Ranch was the name of the ranch. And this family, a really great, hardworking family, had the ranch for over 50 years, which was also great because they never sprayed any harmful chemicals or anything on the ranch. And they did a lot to help protect the water. Well, it was a cattle ranch. And the problem was, you know, I was a videographer. I had a business called Enlightenment Studios, and we did editing and did all these promotional videos and everything. And I didn't know ranching. I didn't want to have to calve in the middle of winter. I didn't want to have to necessarily give the shots and so forth. You know, there was a lot of reasons. It seemed a little more high maintenance compared to yak. Yak are really winter hardy, and I know how cold it gets here. and then they're disease resistant, and so that was important. And, you know, the only turnoff, I think, for a lot of big producers is that yak are slow growers. It takes them, you know, 3 to 5 years to become a big enough for meat production compared to the cattle, you know, even two to three years, I guess, or two. And so we had to pick something that would mow the grass, and they actually eat a third less than cattle. So you could even run more yak on the ranch per acres compared to cattle. They are just high altitude cattle too. You know, they are part of the same family, but they are designed differently where they don't desire you know, as much oxygen. And then, you know, it was a perfect place because the humidity is very low here too. And so they love wintertime though. You see the yak out here and it's winter. They like it a lot more better than the summertime.
Absolutely. And yeah, thinking about just where their native range is, Tibetan Plateau, I mean, that's intense sunlight and intense cold. So if you were going to pick out a spot, you know, in the United States where their habitat would be most suitable, it sounds like Chocoderay is a good home for them to be mowing grass.
Yeah, they say that the Sangres are like the mini Himalayans, you know, and so they're definitely very similar, very climate-wise. So.
And slightly technical question, you said they eat one third, so it's one third of the grass to get to the same size as like a cow would?
Well, so, you know, and I said it takes them longer to grow up, and they just, yak haven't been bred to be really big, like cattle have, you know. So, you know, they eat a third less, you know, meaning like compared to a cow for the same year, you know. So it might take the yak a couple more years to get bigger. You know, but during that same year, you know, as cattle would, they eat they say a third less. We also are completely grass fed and grass finished, which I think is really important because you know, cattle aren't designed to be able to process the corn and grains and stuff. So that's why a lot of people give it towards the end of their lives, because they know that they're going to start getting sick, and then they got to give them antibiotics and all that stuff. But we just give them grass.
Solid. And how has the yak operation changed over time? Did you start with, you know, just a bull and a few of the ladies, and then expand gradually, or how has it kind of evolved over the years?
I got my first yak in 2008. Just a year after buying the ranch, and we bought 12 of them, a nice little starter herd. In fact, our bull was named Growler. He was a 1,600 pound bull. And what was nice about those yak is they all like to be hand fed. So they were very friendly to work with. In fact, we used to do yak tours and with schools and so forth. You know, people ask how many we have now. We have babies every year, and then I've acquired more, different genetics and so forth. But we're between 300 to 400 yak. We have a nice size herd. The reason I say 3 to 4 is they're, still dropping babies even this late in the year. We let them naturally breed. So there's that. And then, we also take some in for our meat production, and then we also sell some. So we're always between about 300 to 400 in the last few years.
My uncle up in South Park has a few yak. That's kind of what got me interested in it. And they are very friendly. It's just amazing. This massive beast with big horns, and you go up to it, give a little treat. Not saying all yaks are that way, but it seems like a lot of folks have an interest in breeding them to be pretty kind. So do you still go out there and hang out with them once in a while and handle them, or has that age passed for you?
Yeah. No, we do. We have to work them. We have to tag them. We don't brand them. We don't dehorn them. I think that would be, pretty sad for the yak, because they really depend on their horns. But I don't hang out with them as much because they're so low maintenance, and we don't do yak tours anymore. But when we work them, they are very gentle, and they're very wise creatures, they seem. But bulls can be bulls, and mamas like to protect their babies. So, there's been a few times where you have to be on your toes. You say, we have this saying that never turn your back on a yak, and just in case. But for the most part, I mean, the more you work with them, and especially when you bottle feed them, we still have one that was bottle fed that's out there, and she comes up and is just super, super friendly. And there, all the other ones are really friendly too, but this one just wants to be petted, so bad. So.
That's awesome. So I can't imagine it's all sunshine and rainbows all the time. I'm curious what the most challenging aspect of raising yaks specifically has been for you.
Well, I think financially it can be tough. It is a premium meat, premium product, but I really like to be fair too. We have, especially in the past, we really used every part of the animal, and we've combed them out for their fiber. You can't shear them because they'll actually burn, so you have to like hand comb them. We've done some like the Taos Wool Festival, and we've sold fiber that way. I'm actually in need of a taxidermy because our taxidermy retired, and so it makes really beautiful rugs. These rugs are amazing, and just really nice. And I always say, if you didn't have heat, you'd survive with this rug. You could use it as a blanket, it's real fuzzy with the tails and the skirt and stuff. And then skulls. So we've had artists paint skulls. In fact, we still have some pelts and skulls on hand. But I'm actively looking for a really good taxidermy to continue that, because I like the Native Americans, if you can use every part of the animal, I think is really important. So there's no waste, we're just really grateful because we have a really good relationship. When we had our cafe, the Yak and Cracker, we'd have some vegetarians or vegans come in, and they didn't need any meat, but they felt like they really needed some protein. And they were like, well, we know where your animals come from, so we want to try your yak. And so once they tried it, it's such a lean meat. So when you eat it, you don't feel like real heavy or anything, And so once they tried it, they kind of got, I don't want to say addicted to it, but they kept coming back, and we called them Yakitarians because they wouldn't eat any other meat but yak. And you can even tell when you pull out some like commercial, you know, I'm not talking about grass-fed beef, but commercial beef, you know, that's done, you know, the commercial way. And you pull it out, it's a really different color too, you know. It's a real rich red color. But, you know, I've noticed people feel good when they eat it. And I'm just very grateful for them. You know, I think when you're a meat eater, if you know where your food comes from, it's very important and how they were treated, you know. And so to be grateful, you know, that this animal gave its life for you. So I'm happy. I came here, you know, once I came here, you know, to protect the water and so forth. I wanted to feed the community, you know, and so I gave up my veggie operation, but I feel like, you know, at least we're still putting up hay, and then we have the protein, we have the yak, and so it's good. It's a good relationship with the community.
Awesome. As a fellow Yakitarian, I can say that I think it's a good dietary choice, and Elkitarian. Yes. Generally, my friends who bring down elk, that's the deal. But I got some sirloins from Valley Roots Food Hub in my freezer. It was a gift for my dad for Christmas. So if folks were interested in purchasing meat from Chocodre, how could they go about doing that?
Well, you know, actually Nick buys from us with the Valley Roots, and he distributes to, you know, his customers. And then, I think he distributes to the Crestone Mercantile in Crestone. We distribute directly to the Elephant Cloud in Crestone. And then we're in some restaurants. We're at the Crestone Brewery. They do some yak burgers there. And then also the Desert Sage has been a long time yak buyer from us. You know, I'm actually looking for maybe one or two other wholesale opportunities. Our herd's finally big enough. I wanted to make sure I was responsible, or we were responsible, about not overselling our yak. You know, I've seen it a lot in the business where people will, you know, scramble, and they'll try to buy bulls to, you know, or steers to butcher and sell. And then, but they'll even like buy mamas and do it that way too. And just to fill big orders. And I never wanted to get to that point. You know, I wanted to make sure we were responsible with growing our herd, without decimating it or anything like that, you know? And so, but anyway, yes, those are the places. Always looking for more. And then we do sometimes ranch sales too. Our ranch website is a good one to reach out to us. It's ChokureYakRanch.org, ChokureI, YakRanch.org.
Gotcha.
Good way to connect with us. And, you know, like I said, we, at least a couple times a year, we do a ranch meat sale, yeah, so we can offer wholesale to the customers and so forth.
Well, I'll keep my
eyes. That's a good way to get a hold of us too, if you wanted a yak pelt or a yak skull, you know.
Absolutely. So for our listeners out there who are seeking one of those items, maybe a last minute Christmas gift, you know where to go. So yeah. Tell us a little bit more. You mentioned the yak and cracker. Tell us a little bit more about that and what that looked like. I understand it's no longer an operation. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, we had a lot of support from the community. It's always hard running a business, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, you know. So especially in the wintertime, you know, a lot of people move away and stuff. But how the yak and cracker kind of became in existence is that we were on the corner, or Saturday markets or at the kiosk, selling veggies, selling our eggs. We had these amazing egg production for a number of years, and selling our yak. And then we joined forces with an incredible couple that made some living crackers. And so, you know, we were doing that, and then we were like, okay, it's winter time and we're freezing and we need a place to sell our products. So we did a Chokeray farm store at the golf course in Crestone. And then we sold at the music festival. We decided to smoke some yak meat and, you know, have all our fresh salads and all that. And people are like, you need to open up a restaurant. So we ended up deciding, since we sold crackers and we sold yak, to call it the Yak and Cracker Cafe. One of the most things I'm proud about is that it was completely GMO free. And, all organic and fresh from the farm. So we would get up and, you know, harvest twice a week, but we'd harvest at like 5-6 in the morning. And that same day, we get fresh veggies over to this cafe and store, and people could buy it or have a salad. And because they say when you pick a fresh veggie, you know, it starts losing its vitamins. So the quicker you eat it, the more vitamins you're going to get, you know. And so anyway, it was a wonderful journey. We had so much fun. We did, we were part of the Crestone Music Festival, but we throw our own events and so forth, like the Yaktoberfest, which was pretty cool. And then I had that, you know, I had the veggie operation. We grew all year round, and which was great to have fresh produce all year round, you know, coming right here instead of it having to be shipped from California or, you know, shipped from all these different places. And I got a call from my dad. And he said, man, you know, it's so hard with, you're not making any money. And it's such a struggle for you. Keep the yak going, keep the hay production going, but maybe you should grow cannabis. And I was like, well, I came here to feed people, you know, but I do believe in cannabis. And I think it's a medicine that can help a lot of people, you know. And so I quit the veggie operation. It was really hard too, all the labor with organic farming and weeding and so forth. Then I realized the cannabis operation is a lot of work too. But we used the same principles as we did when we were growing veggies. And so we grow sun-grown organic cannabis. The name of our business is Sacred Valley Medicine, which is right on Chokeray Ranch. And then a couple years ago, we were like, well, we need a store. You know, we need a place to sell directly to the people, which is kind of cool because the legal name's Sacred Valley Pharmacy with an F. And I feel like it is like a pharmacy. We have very clean products. And then when somebody comes in there, sometimes they say, well, you know, I get these migraines, and we can't legally say, hey, this is medicine and it's going to, you know, help you. But we can make suggestions like this might be a good product. This might be a good product. I've seen it over and over again. People like all different ages, 70-year-old, 80-year-old people coming in, and it helps with their arthritis. It helps with, you know, all these different ailments. And it's kind of what's kept me going with the cannabis business, because it's a very tough business, how taxed it is, how competitive it is. There's a lot of tough things about the cannabis business, but it's the medicine, you know, just like food. Food is medicine. You know, when I had that slogan with the Yak and Crackers is know where your food comes from and feel good when you eat. And it's true. You eat good food, you feel good. And, you know, you might not have to you might have a lot less trips to the doctors, if you're eating well and you're taking good care of yourself. What I like about cannabis is, you know, I've seen a lot of people get off pain pills and so forth. The whole opioid addiction and stuff. So it's been a good journey. I'm proud of where we're at. Primo Cannabis in Villa Grove and Sacred Valley Medicine and Chokeray Ranch. I think it's good to do what you feel good about, you know, like for work, you know.
Absolutely. It's some Renaissance entrepreneurialism over the years as well. So thank you for all of your efforts in keeping the community in mind while you do them as well, and offering those services. And just on the note of you know, food being health. And I was a food security volunteer in the Peace Corps in Nepal. Tried to chase, you know, my yak interest all the way to Nepal before I came to the Valley. And they told us when we were teaching food education in villages to think about foods in terms of three different realms. There's the energy giving food. That's like your carbohydrates, you know, your protection food, your vitamins, minerals, vegetables, fruits, and then your body repair and growth. And that's your proteins. So thinking about yaks as, you know, healing and body repair, it's, yeah, I guess I'm just trying to justify why I bought these steaks, but it'll be a good Christmas gift nevertheless.
You know that's interesting, Seth. Hopefully I didn't interrupt you. I always talked about three levels of food, and it's the intention that you put in. And so the people growing your food or handling your animals, if they're good, if they're happy and they're thinking really good thoughts and so forth, I feel like that can go into the food. The second level is if somebody's cooking it. You know, they always say there's nothing like mom's cooking. Well, why is that? Because she loves you and she's putting love into it and she wants you to feel good, you know? And you can totally tell the difference. Like if you go to somebody and there's somebody angry, that food's not going to taste very good, you know? And then the third level of putting good intention into food and stuff is you, it being on your plate. Even if you are eating some animal that, you know, was tortured and whatever, or vegetables that were grown with chemicals, I feel like you can put your hands over it and be grateful for it, and you can overturn some of that. Now, if it's all grown well, and it's all put with good intention, and it's all organic, and it's all these good things, and you're being grateful for it, then you have like this superb meal, you know, and it'll help you feel good.
Those are, I feel like I went horizontal and you just went vertical in a way that was awesome. That's a great philosophy. Those three levels are great. I'm going to take them to the Foods Coalition office, a little write up.
Yeah, so I want to have you out for a yak tour sometime, you know, and I know you've seen yak and been around yak, but you have to come see our yak.
Most definitely. And it's good timing to bring that up because I looked up at the clock and we're just about out of time here, actually. The last question, and we've touched base on this quite a bit, is Chokoray, you know, you go to the website, it says home of the happy yak. And I'm going to ask you, what makes a happy yak?
Well, always making sure they have good food, good feed, you know, and plenty of room to roam. I think just the love and care and the interactions that we have with them too. But they just, you know, as long as they have each other too, they're very herd-like animals. You know, like if somebody bought a yak for me, I would never want them just to buy one. You know, I'd want them to at least buy two because they really need a buddy. But yeah, we just got to know them and try to take the very best care of them. And I think they're happy. You know, I think when you see them running around, you can tell that they're enjoying themselves.
Well, Kyle, thank you so much for joining us today. And yeah, thanks also for providing me with a Christmas present.
Happy holidays to you, Seth.
This has been the Local Foods, Local Places radio show. If you want to learn more about Kyle Grody's Yak Ranch, you can go to chokorayyakranch.org. That's Chokurei yakranch.org. If you want to hear today's episode again, you can go to slvlocalfoods.org. This is 88.7 KRZA. We're streaming live also on krza.org, connecting cultures across the Upper Rio Grande. Have a great day, everyone.